This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Great, Wally. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing that. I'm doing a little bit of load management this morning, Naz. I've normally been down to the studio since September. I've got to do it from home today, unfortunately. So we're okay. Nothing to worry about. Lou, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti's with us this morning. How are you, Lou?
Morning, John. Pretty good. Thanks, yourself?
John? Lou. I thought you referred to John. Maybe I misspoke. Gentlemen, Alabama.
Yes, sir. They're going to back in, boys.
Okay. Let's talk about that one because everything I'm reading, suggests that Alabama is not going to make the college football playoff. Just to recap what occurred, over the course of the weekend, going into the weekend, the locks were Michigan and Georgia and Texas Christian University, TCU, and USC. But TCU and USC had games to play, conference championships. Looking out from the outside was Ohio State and Alabama, who weren't playing this weekend. Of course, as college football is always interesting, TCU and SC both lost. So the college football people today have to make a decision who's going to make it to the college football playoff. Four teams, Georgia and Michigan, obviously are going in. And then we've got a battle for the next four. And I got to tell you, Naz, from what I'm reading, TCU's not going to get punished for their game yesterday. SC's going to get, they're not going to make it. They got pummeled by Utah on Friday night. Right now, from what I'm reading, Naz, it's going to be, in this order, Georgia, Michigan, TCU, and Ohio State's moving up to number four. Convince me why I'm wrong, Naz.
Well, the two games Alabama lost by 1 point, right? Correct?
I don't disagree with you. I know Nick...
And they have a tougher schedule, too. So
I don't disagree with you there either. I'll get you involved, Lou. You know, Nick Saban was out there lobbying for Alabama yesterday. In the point that Saban was making, you go Alabama TCU or Alabama Ohio State. Who are the favorites in that game? No question, an Alabama TCU game. Alabama's the favorite. Alabama Ohio State might be a little bit closer, but if you're trying to pick the best teams to go in. You know, TCU may have had a better season, but I don't see how you can classify them as a better team.
Remember what Joe Theismann said a few weeks ago? I asked him the question, who's the best team in the league? Most talented, it's Alabama.
I don't disagree with you, Naz, and I'll come back to my point. But, Lou, go ahead. Lobby for Alabama, Lou.
Well, really, there isn't that much lobbying. It's a tough position to be in for the committee. I understand that no two-loss team has ever gotten in. The way I look at it, if you put Alabama and TCU head-to-head, who's going to be favored? If during the regular season, if both those teams had lost, you don't think Alabama would have moved into the number three hole? I know they lost in overtime, but what it's going to come down to is you want your four best teams in football. And if Alabama doesn't get in there, it's going to be a crying shame. For one, I don't want to see Michigan and Ohio State go at it. I want to see Ohio State and Georgia go at it. Okay? And two,
Well, why not? Let me interrupt you. Who cares whether Michigan and Ohio State go at it? Because Alabama and Georgia have been going at it in the CFP. So what's the difference?
Well, only because they've done it this year already. Okay? Georgia hasn't played Alabama this year at all.
Well, last year they played twice, right?
Last year they played twice, yeah, because one was in the Southeast Conference Championship game. Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't during their regular season. And the other one was in the finals.
Okay. Your second point, Luke.
So the second and probably the most important point is you want the four best teams in college football, and who's going to give you the biggest rating? You're telling me you're going to
I think
Georgia and TCU play?
Yeah. I don't think the college football committee, I don't know if they consider it, but it's not on the criteria who gives you the biggest rating, although...
You're probably right.
Officially, they're never going to say that. Unofficially, who knows what they consider? I mean, they look at all the certain criteria, strength of schedule, conference champion. They got a laundry list of stuff they go down, and if you tick all the boxes, it seems like TCU ticks all the boxes, just like Cincinnati did. Was it last year that Cincinnati went in undefeated, or was it the year before?
Last year.
Yeah, this TCU team reminds me a bit of that Cincinnati team. Although you got to give them credit, they did beat some. They beat Tech. I don't know what other teams they beat. They beat Kansas State, they beat Kansas State in their first game. Naz?
Yeah, by 10.
TCU? Yeah. Okay. So they lost in overtime yesterday. They've got a quality marquee quarterback that apparently is a Heisman Trophy candidate to. Gave his heart and soul yesterday. I think his name's Duggan, if I'm not mistaken. I think what the CFP committee might look at, and this is not in the criteria, and this is not in the check boxes, they're going to say, let's let some other teams into this thing. Alabama's a mainstay. They've been there. I don't think they've ever missed the CFP. If they have, maybe one, two max. I don't know. You guys help me out. But let's get some fresh faces. We don't want to necessarily see crimson this year around. We want to see some black and purple. I've got to tell you, I think that's going to be one of the biggest factors in this committee, and that's why TCU's making it. Not because the committee necessarily deep down thinks that TCU's a better team. They're not. Alabama, they lost two games, okay, but look at the quality of what they've got. Bryce, the quarterback, Young, Heisman Trophy winner. If Alabama was playing TCU heads up, I think Alabama would be a 7.5 to 9 point favorite.
The best two teams are Georgia and Alabama right now. That's who they are.
Michigan's looked. I got to tell you, Naz, Michigan's looked pretty good.
I don't think
they have, Lou. Lou, what do you think about Michigan?
I watched the Michigan game last night, and they are one tough team. They beat you up the old-fashioned way. It's between the lines. It's with the defensive front. It's with the offensive front. They just wear you down. And you might have a next superstar in J.J. McCarthy as quarterback coming in, and watch this kid. Their running back, who replaced a Heisman Trophy candidate in Ohio State game. I think he ran for 267 yards against Ohio State, and yesterday he ran for 180. Turned the whole game around with a 60-yard run in the first play of the third quarter.
Certainly. I foresee a Michigan Georgia. If I put a few dollars down, it's going to be Michigan Georgia in the ultimate final game here, and we'll talk about that one after the first
now
one.
Next year they're going to put 12 teams in, from what I understand.
Next year, the year after, Lou, is it 2024?
It's 2024, and that's why Nick Saban has voted for that, because you're going to get situations like this, and. And then you're going to have other problems, because now you're going to look at teams that are 13 through 15 that want to get into that top 12.
I think ultimately
Notre Dame will get in that way. Notre Dame will get in that way.
Thanks. Thanks for rubbing it in, Naz. I appreciate it.
If it was ratings they worried about, they would be in there every year.
Oh, they'd have the there was television ratings. They had the Fighting Irish in every year, but four losses ain't going to do it. But ultimately, when you get, you know, what the CFP, what these checklists and the way they go through it, what it fails really, I think, to take into account is the nature of sports, which in every other sport, if you make the playoffs, how many times does a team just barely make the playoffs and then they run the table, right? So it really doesn't take into account the teams that are peaking. You know, you could have one or two losses earlier in the season, but then you start peaking at the end of the season and, you know, you get on a roll, and that's, you know, the 12-team playoff will take that more into consideration than a 14 playoff. Anyways, guys, World Cup of Soccer is still on. Lionel Messi is getting everybody excited. Canada did not have a great week last Sunday morning. At this time, we were getting ready for the Croatia game. We're all excited after what Canada did against Belgium, and then we had a bit of a letdown this week. And we're gonna pick that up with Carmen and Marcantoni and Roberto Iarrucci later on in the hour. The voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Joe Bowen. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when I was remembering back to when I didn't know about Pizzaville. It was a rainy day when we knew that our marriage was on the rocks. The spark was gone. The fire was out. Everything was undercooked. We saw a marriage counsellor who made us realise that it wasn't our fault. It was those big pizza conglomerates. Their pizzas were so bland and doughy, all we wanted to do was roll over and go to sleep. So we tried Pizzaville, and it put a little spice and variety back into our marriage. Every week, we try different toppings. My wife especially loves the hot Italian sausage. At Pizzaville, we make authentic Italian-style stone-baked pizza. Call Pizzaville at 736-3636 or order online at pizzaville.ca.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Your grandkids are discovering trading cards for the first time. When you were their age, you collected all your favorite sports heroes. Maybe your younger self wants to show them the ropes. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise has a wide selection to get them started. From athletes to superheroes, relive some memories and make some new ones. Shop Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise and put a hero under their tree. Two locations in Toronto and Vaughan, or find them first at mintink.ca.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise. Understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, 96.7 FM in downtown Toronto, and live streaming on www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour this morning Canadian Soccer Hall of Famers Carmen and Marcantonio and Roberto Iarrucci. Carmen and Bob, are you guys with us? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Walter. Yes, I am.
Bob, I'm here, are you there?
Wally, I'm here. Good morning to everyone.
Good morning and thank you. Gentlemen, let me switch positions a little bit here. gentlemen, last Sunday morning, we were all excited. We had a fantastic show. Canada was at, wouldn't say at the top of the soccer world, but we were on cloud nine after Canada's performance against Belgium. And we, after the show was over last Sunday, got in my car, hustled home, and Canada faced off against Croatia at 11 a.m., and then we got Morocco in the middle of the week, and things didn't go so well for Canada. And there's a sporting phrase that, I don't know if you guys watch TSN at all, but it's entered the sporting lexicon. What happened to Canada? Well, according to Kelvin Kilblain, I think his name is on TSN, it's called technical naivete. That's a great one, man. I got to remember that one for a while. That one's one, too, with load management. Tactical naivete. And Cartman at first you, and then you, Bob. Is that what Canada's problem was this week? Tactical naivete. Go ahead, Cartman.
Yeah, I think... John Herdman got it all wrong this time away, because as much as he was given all the credit and credit was due for him to put a good competitive team in the in the CONCACAF, and they came in first, so he needs a lot of credit for doing really well, and nobody expected Canada to qualify.
Fine.
But once you are at the big play, once you're on the world stage, I think he will be the first one to admit that he got it wrong this time with, first of all, with making that very, very unsportsmanlike comment on F Croatia publicly. And that was a big, big mistake. And tactically, I think he got it wrong from the beginning, because I would have rested Alfonso Davis. I wouldn't have started in the first game. Have him come on against Belgium the first game, and then slowly break him in, because he came from a big injury. And also he got it wrong by not playing Sam, and I can never say his name, number three.
Adebugi.
He's a left fullback, the natural left fullback. He did always well when he came in and played against the U.S., scored an amazing goal. And when he played, every time he came in those 20 minutes, he was one that caused the second goal, the own goal against Morocco. So he does really well defensively, offensively, and I don't know why he didn't play him. And plus, he cannot play at this level. He cannot play high press for 90 minutes. He gotta play a chess game. I mean, we've seen what these big teams do: Holland, Argentina. They play the waiting game. So I think he got it wrong this time out. Yeah,
Bob, I want to turn it over to you. Tactical naivete, I guess, inexperience, whatever. There are moments. Canada, it wasn't an entirely dysfunctional performance. You look at possession numbers. Interestingly enough, they had more possession than Croatia did in their game, 52-48, and they had significantly more possession in the Morocco game, actually less possession than Belgium, but it was pretty even. But there were moments in those games I felt, and I don't want to turn this into a criticism of John Herdman, he did an incredible job with the team getting them there. I'm just hopeful that he's learned from the experience. But there were moments in those two games, and the goaltender, let's be fair, let him down, certainly in the Morocco game. There are moments, though, I failed. He failed to make the tactical adjustments. Are those fair criticisms?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, last week I talked about Alfonso Davis's debut into the World Cup, and there was a whole public relations play on behalf of making all of the country feel comfortable about the fact that Alfonso Davis was ready to play, and he took all the physical tests. To be ready to play, to be game fit, doesn't only mean, your muscle feels a little better than it did a few weeks ago. It's also your physical, your physical being, your mental being. And you know what kills me? It kills me that we played against Morocco. They have their best player is their right fullback, Hakimi. He's the world's best right fullback. And we arguably might have the world's best left fullback. The only problem is Herdman never plays Davies where he's supposed to play. He's a left fullback. Against Morocco, he played five positions that whole 90 minutes. What is that? Who does that?
Which team has a jolly like that that they put wherever he wants? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think going in, and I'll turn it over to you, Nash. I just want to make a follow up on Bob's comment. What I thought going in was the big weakness of the Canadian team, and it certainly got exposed on the first goal, the Belgium goal, and the second goal in the Morocco game was the pace of their guys on the back line. And some of the quick forwards on the other team were just blowing by them, and that happened twice. And you know, Davies, if he was playing left back, which is the position he plays at Bayern, I don't want to be a Monday morning quarterback here, but those two goals probably never happened. And
he had Sam at left back,
But it was a learning experience. Let's be fair. Inexperience showed at times, and hopefully those lessons were learned. Hopefully John Herdman goes and looks at the tapes, reevaluates, he sits down with a committee, and they evaluate the positives and the negatives, and they make a plan for moving forward. But certainly, in some respects, I felt like it was a lost opportunity in some ways. Nobody expected Canada to win this tournament. But the way things shook up, you look around, Naz, and you made this point, and I'll let you make it again. You know, the difference between the top quality teams and some of the teams lower in the rankings has certainly shrunk. And every team is capable of beating, possibly except for Qatar, every team's capable of beating any other team in these tournaments. Naz, I know you made that point. Go ahead, Naz.
Is there any chance of Herdman not coming back as the coach, guys? Because there might be some rumblings he's going somewhere else.
I'll turn that one over to Bob first, and then over to you for a minute. Is Herdman going to, and he was asked this specific question, and I'll let you respond first, Bob, and then over to Kadri. Bob?
Well, I think he signed a long-term contract with Canada Soccer, endorsed by Jason DeVos, who's really the brains behind acquiring Herdman, and I think he did sign for 8 years. So to take him to the 2026 World Cup, but it sure looked like he was he was auditioning for other opportunities in anticipation of the World Cup, based on the good work that he had done with this team that nobody thought was going to qualify. And we need to remember all of the arduous moments that we had against Haiti and all the different games that we had to play and permutations of teams until we finally came to the octagon. But I think Herdman, in my opinion, still would like to be somebody special in his home world in England. But I think we should expect him to be the coach for Canada for the next 4 years.
Kind of any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the same as Bobby. I think he's going nowhere. I don't think he's ready for big time soccer yet. He's perfect for the national team, and because he's a great motivator. As we say, tactically, I'm still not sure. Is that Canada playing a good brand of soccer? But at this level, I still say that he's the first culprit, because tactically he let down setting up the team. If we look at Australia, Canada, I think, is a stronger team than Australia. Australia went lost to Argentina, but they went to the next phase. They won two games. Look at United States. United States outplayed Holland yesterday. If we're talking about possession, I think it was like 58 to 42, something like that. But at the end of the day, they still lost the game. But they did well. Mexico was one goal away from qualifying. And Canada beat these teams in CONCACAF. But yet, I think this time out, John got it wrong. He knows about it, and he's got a second chance, and he's going to do that with Canada. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Lou, I'll give you an opportunity to get involved. Go ahead.
Guys, it's more or less, these are small growing pains for Team Canada, and being in as a professional athlete, like both of you, Marco Antonio and Mr. Arushi there, is that I guess they've got to learn how to lose first. These guys came into this tournament wide-eyed, not knowing exactly what to expect on the big stage. Sure, they played Belgium toe-to-toe. They should have beat them. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure if this team was ready to play, and now they've got to take small steps towards 2026 and make this team a little bit better, because even though they will get a random position in this tournament, they've got to play that much better, and I think they will be ready for that. And Mr. Herdman there, I think he's got to bring his enthusiasm or his intensity a level, just a touch down, because sooner or later, these players are going to turn him off if he keeps up that intensity level. But again, Canada does belong at the world stage level. I'm just not sure if they belong in the World Cup right now. 4 years down the road, we'll have to judge and see if these guys have made a gradual improvement. And we always say, you got to learn how to lose first before you learn how to win.
Yeah, that's a good one,
Lou. That's a good point.
That is a good point. Guys, there's you know, we can talk all the whole hour about Canada, but the World Cup's moved on. And, you know, now we're getting down to the short stroke. Argentina, I wouldn't call it a little scary yesterday, got a little bit, I guess, more competition at the end of that game than they would have liked. But, you know, a little bit of challenge may hold them in good stead as they go down. England has looked pretty good so far. France and Poland today. Brazil is Brazil, although they lost to the Cameroon. But, you know, you get into these third games with nothing to play for. You know, they throw out their B-side. Kind of in at first, and then Bob, size up where we are and what can we look forward to. Who's going to move forward as we move along? Kind of in it.
Yeah, I think you said the last one, I don't know if it was last week or the week before this, when we talked that the soccer, the football world order is going to be reestablished, I feel, even though there's been a lot of upsets with Japan beating both Spain and Germany and Tunisia beating France, although it was only the third game, the final game, and we know France was already qualified, and the same thing with Cameroon, Brazil. But now they're playing for the goods. And I think at the end of the day, my take is that the big teams that have been at this stage, at this level, like Argentina yesterday and like Holland against the U.S., put a good show, but at the end of the day was 3-1 Holland. And the same thing with Australia, put a good show, but it was Argentina coming on top. And I think that's what you're going to see in this phase. I feel that the top teams with the top players are going to come on top. Naz, I'm sorry. I know that you're looking at Japan and Korea maybe to qualify, and it could happen because we know, guys, in sports, you never know. It's played on the field. It's 90 minutes. Is actually, in this case, it could be 120 minutes plus all the injury time. But I think quality at the end is going to come on top, and I feel that's going to be the same usual suspects that are going to be there.
Bob, certainly watching Lionel Messi is, and with that English commentator, I don't know if there's a more exciting commentator in the whole world in any sports right now. But he's had the privilege, and we've had the privilege to listen to him describe two Leo Messi goals, the first one in one of the qualifiers, and of course the goal yesterday. And it's certainly when Leo Messi scores a goal, it's as he calls him the Magic Man. It's certainly a magical moment, and he scores. And I don't know how many people live in Argentina, probably 30, 40, 50 million. I have no idea. I got to look it up, but he's captivating a nation in the soccer world with his exploits on the field. He's certainly, so far, he's been the story of this World Cup, hasn't he, Bob?
Oh, he sure has. And the goal yesterday, and they described it really well, the post-game on TSN, where he collected that ball after the free kick. He stopped it on a dime. He shielded from the defender. He looked to make the pass, and then he made that sprint towards the top of the box. He received the pass. He played a 1-2, and then he had the presence of mind to understand he didn't have to whack it hard. He just looked, and he filtered it through the legs of the other player into the corner, and the ball just comfortably went in. It was incredible, because a normal player would not have taken the decisions that Lionel Messi took in his
in his adventure towards the goal. It was unbelievable. It really was. He's just a magic man. But Carmen, I think, is right. I'll just go back to the grid. I think there may be one upset. I look at on the side with Morocco, Spain, Portugal, Switzerland. I think there may be an upset there, but Brazil, I think Croatia will go through, France, England, and we will have world order again, and maybe one little hitch on those matches.
Naz, go ahead.
The Leafs and England have something in common, guys. They both are 66 years without the cup. Does England win it finally?
Naz, you're always good for one of those. That's awesome.
You know
guys.
That, man. Yeah, 66.
Don't make me laugh this morning, Ned. It makes me hurt. I'm under management. Go ahead, guys. The Leafs and I give you a chance to respond to Ned. Leafs in England. Maybe we'll both. Maybe both will exorcise their hexes this year.
You know what? I'll say this: that England, they may be due. They got a good young team, and they were finalists and lost to Italy in the Europeans. And I wouldn't discount them out. They could go far in this World Cup if obviously.
Don't discount them out. They were my long shot pick. It took a lot of heat, a lot of criticism for picking England in this World Cup. And there's one soccer writer I respect, John Molinaro, who writes quite a bit of soccer, and he's got them at the top of the heap right now. So watch out for England. What do you think, Bob, about England?
I don't think they'll get by France. Sorry, I don't see them. I think they have a coach who's. He plays a little bit too shy. His team is not dynamic enough, in my opinion. And I think France is just a little bit too much for them. If they had met them later on and had another game under their belt, I might see it. I just don't think that they're the team to break through. I see Brazil a lot stronger than them in the end, and Argentina as well. So maybe they're, for me, fourth or fifth on the list.
Interesting. Carmina, I know I believe you picked Argentina when all this started. Are you still an Argentinian guy here?
Yeah, I still stick with Argentina, even though we know, Brazil, France, Spain, we said England, Holland. Holland, Holland, after that win against U.S., let's not forget Holland, because they've been finalists three times. 1974 with the great Johan Cruyff, 1978 in Argentina, and then again, 2010 in South Africa against Spain. So they've been at the big stage, Holland, and they could be due, but again, it's a toss-up. Any game, we saw the games yesterday, could have gone either way, but then the big boys stepped up and they put it at the back of the net. That's what counts. With the Leafs, they got to put it in the net.
Put the puck in the net. Kaiman, I know that, we corresponded yesterday. There's a couple of rule changes that you're advocating for. There's a couple of issues with respect to the rules that you think FIFA's got to have a look at. Got a minute?
The handball, and I say that I posted something on the media, social media, but they got to definitely review, make it define the handball rule. Because right now there's too much gray area when it's handball, when it's not an infringement, and when it's not. So they got to redefine that and make it easy for the ref to call an infringement when the ball hits the hand. And also they got to think this offside thing by a nose or by a pubic hair. it's ridiculous. I think that has to be reviewed. I like to see a gap. Space between the defender and the offensive player before an offside.
I got to say, I kind of like that one. These ones where some guy's fingernail is offside, I'm sort of finding a bit ridiculous. In the old days, the linesmen and the officials would exercise a little bit better discretion, but now with VAR, they can't. Bob, what do you think of Kaiman's suggestion? If it's going to be offside, there's got to be clear daylight. Between the offending player and the defending player. Bob?
Well, I'm definitely, I hate the offside rule. The 10-second delay that the linesman waits 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds and then finally raises his flag, that's got to go. That's ridiculous. Players get hurt in those 7, 8 seconds. I remember a TFC player who got hurt because he chased a ball that was eventually going to be called offside and he got hurt. It's ridiculous. I don't know who came up with that idea, but that person, I don't know. He doesn't understand.
Bobby, no, just to
let me finish.
I just want to mention about why the 10-second delay by the linesman, because sometimes they get it wrong, and if they score a goal and it's not an offside, then the linesman got it wrong, so they have to wait.
But we have VAR. We have VAR. They do no, both guys up there are already stopping the game four times.
If they wait
in 90 minutes.
But if the ref whistles offside when the linesman puts a flag, and if it's not an offside, and a goal comes out of that, that's why they wait.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind that. Because a goal, there could be a goal that could be valid, and we've had cases like that.
Guys, gentlemen, unfortunately, on that note, I've got to wrap up this segment of the show. I'll let both of you guys go. Thanks so much for joining us. And we've got more World Cup soccer coming up in the next couple of weeks. Next, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And who better? The voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Joe Bowen. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we received several angry letters from the general public. Pizzaville's central phone number is 736-3636. But it seems that some listeners thought I was saying 7 free sex, free sex, free sex. Pizzaville does not condone free sex, except among consenting adults. But to make amends to those listeners who thought they heard 7 free sex, free sex, free sex, Pizzaville recommends that you try our hot Italian sausage on your next Pizzaville pizza, because maybe you need a little more spice in your life. So, whether it's a sunny day or a rainy day, call Pizzaville at 736-3636, not 7-free-sex-free-sex-free-sex. Pizzaville, authentic Italian-style stone-baked pizza.
Your grandkids are discovering trading cards for the first time. When you were their age, you collected all your favorite sports heroes. Maybe your younger self wants to show them the ropes. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise has a wide selection to get them started. From athletes to superheroes, relive some memories and make some new ones. Shop Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise and put a hero under their tree. Two locations in Toronto and Vaughan, or find them first at mintink.ca.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise. Understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We're pleased to welcome back the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Joe Bowen. Good morning, Joe. How are you this morning?
Good, guys. How are you today?
Joe, we're great. Thanks so much for asking, Joe. Thanks so much for joining us. Last night's game, we didn't get the result that Leafs Nation would have liked, but we did get another result, and it was captured in your usual fantastic call. Congratulations, Joe. You always capture the moment. Mitch Marner. 19th consecutive game, now holds that record from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Certainly a great moment. Joe, you did a great job with it, as you usually do. Your thoughts on that moment?
Well, it puts him, I think, 17 games ahead of Lou Franceschetti's personal best.
Guys, don't make me laugh.
Which is a very important statistic that very few people, I think, have actually brought up under these circumstances. But you know what? When you think of Ted Kennedy, Sillaps, all of these people in the past, Lanny McDonald didn't get that high. Matt Sundin's longest streak was 11. It really does bring into context how talented this young man is. And although the streak started rather quietly, it has picked up with momentum and is now really in full bore. And once he got over this little hump, I'm going to be quite interested to see how long this thing actually goes. I'm not old enough to remember everybody wondering, did Joe get another hit today? But when DiMaggio went 51 games with a hit in each game, it just seemed to be, okay, it's another day, he's gotten another hit. Well, this is the way Marner is playing right now. And when he can score goals the way he did last night, but the way and his creativity, if he has people with him on that power play and certainly with John Tavares, this could go a long way. This could go a lot further than the 19 that it's currently at.
Certainly, Marner was exceptional last night, all over the ice, shorthanded, power play. He was doing everything last night. I don't think I've ever seen him play any better. Naz, I'll turn it over to you. Go ahead, Naz.
Yeah, Joe, are you surprised at the play of Mark Giordano at 39 years old and how good he has played?
Well, it's really interesting. He and Hall have been among the league best five-on-five in surrendering goals. They were on the ice last night for one, but they're playing very, very well. And if you watch Mark Giordano, he doesn't do anything too flashy. He gets the puck, he moves the puck. I'm reminded of the great line that the immortal Doug Harvey gave to Bobby Plager when he came up when he was 40-some-odd years old. And as they sat before the playoff game with Philadelphia, Harvey went to the younger Plager and said to him, "Mr. Plager, I have one rule and one rule only. If I pass you the puck, under no circumstances are you to ever pass it back to me." And so the whole idea was keep it simple. Give it to the idiots up at the front end, let them screw it up, but we're not going to do it back here. And if you watch how they play in their own end, it's one pass usually and it's out. And that's... they've really kept it simple, and Mark Giordano really has done a marvelous job in anchoring a defense that has been hit hard by injury.
Lou, I'll let you entertain with Joe. Go ahead, Lou.
Morning, Joe.
Hey, Louis.
Yeah, I know. I played against a few Boston defensemen, and I guess there was a cardinal rule in the old Boston Garden that any time they got the puck or certain people got the puck, it was off the glass and out. Don't even think twice of putting it, going stick to stick to another defense partner. But that's neither here nor there. As well as the Leafs have done in the last month, last night's overtime goal still concerns me a little bit. How has Matt Murray improved or adapted to playing in Toronto and more or less trying to carry this team on their shoulders?
Well, I don't think that you would be able to ask Matt Murray today if he was happy with the winning goal. But I'll tell you one thing, that's one area that hasn't happened very often. In fact, I can't remember a bad goal that he's given up until that one. So I think you have to cut him a little bit of slack on that. But what he has done is really calm things down in the defensive zone. He's not flailing all over the place. His positional play has been outstanding. He gets big and solid and doesn't give up too many juicy rebounds. And I think the defense kind of rallies around that kind of play. So I've been very impressed with him, to be honest with you. And
The whole idea about bringing Matt Murray here was the big question mark. Can he stay healthy? Well, initially, the answer to that was no. But at this particular point, I mean, he took a pretty good pounding there last night when the collision in the game with Tampa, and yet he bounced back. So if he stays healthy, I think that the Leafs are in business, and certainly they've shown with Samsonov that they have a pretty good 1-2 punch going forward. So it won't be from overwork that he gets hurt, and we just hope that that is a situation that can maintain itself through the rest of the season, because I think he's been a real steadying influence back there as far as playing goal is concerned.
Joe Bowen. Joe, we've been quoting you quite a bit on our show lately. I don't know if I'm sure you don't remember, but when the Leafs started off the season last year, they started off poorly, and we had you on the show when they were, like, after the first 7-8 games, and we were all excited, and you said, guys, calm down. Call me after 20-25 games and we can talk. And it's sort of the same thing happened this year, and your words always stuck in our mind. Slow start, but they've been on a run in November. And interestingly enough, they've done it with some significant injuries, which seems they've had the opportunity to give Sandin and Liljegren significant ice time, you know, missing some of their core defense. Pretty remarkable that the Leafs have done this well, considering the depletion of the defense ranks. Any comments on that, Joe?
Well, they're third in the conference. They trail New Jersey and Boston. Boston's just been ridiculous, and that will end. They are 14-0 at home. So we're looking forward to the Leafs' first visit to the Boston Garden, see if they can't maybe end that streak. But the one thing that they have done that I've been very impressed with has been their defensive play and their goals against. They've allowed just 66 goals thus far this season. They've scored 79, and the Rocket Richard Trophy, Hart Trophy winner, has really not hit his stride yet. So having said that, you would think that that's going to improve given the rest of the season until they get to game 82. And if they continue to play as well as they have defensively, it will stand them in good stead when the postseason starts at the end of the year. So, they did start slowly again, and for whatever reason it was. But this is a talented group. And what we're also seeing is that Kyle Dubas has managed to put together some pretty good depth, because I don't know how many teams would have gone through all of the defense injuries that they've had and still be able to play as well defensively as this team has over the course of the last, half dozen games and carrying forward. So, you have to change personnel. The salary cap dictates that you can't keep everyone. Certainly they miss an Ilya Mikheyev, but they couldn't keep him. They miss a Zach Hyman. They couldn't keep him. But they find a way to plug some people in here that are going to help out. And somebody like a David Camp is almost as valuable a player that the Leafs have, mainly because, A, how much they pay him, but, B, how much ice time he eats up doing other things and playing as well defensively as he does. So I think you have to tip your hat to management and what they've done to try to maintain the core, maintain this kind of effort and everything else going forward. And Sheldon Keefe has to get a little bit of a tip of the cap, too. He's been under fire and been under some heat. And certainly when they started slowly, there were all of the rumblings that normally go on in Toronto. But I think those rumblings have been quieted quite sufficiently now.
Certainly have. Naz?
Now that they seem to have depth on the defense, Joe, trade deadline, looking for a top six forward. What about Patrick Kane coming to Toronto?
Well, I mean, you can have a wish list if you want. But what are you going to give up? You're going to give up another first-round draft pick, probably. That in itself is something that, I mean, I'm not sure that this team needs more offensive power. What it probably needs is more depth. I'm not a big proponent of it. I know it's attractive, and everybody thinks what a tremendous player, and obviously he is. But I think the asking price is going to be fairly substantive. And I'm not so sure that the Maple Leafs at this point, after going that direction a couple of times and giving up their first-round pick, I'm not so sure that that will be the case this time around.
Joe, how much of a genius does Kyle Dubas look like right now, not signing Jack Campbell to I think it was 5 years or over $5 million a year, bringing in Matt Murray and Samsonov, who statistics-wise right now are two of the top 10 goalies in the league, statistically. Kyle's looking pretty good on that move right now, Joe. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I feel badly for Jack. I think he's probably put himself under undue self-pressure that hasn't been able to handle. But, I mean, you take a look at what would you have thought if the Maple Leafs had traded for the young man from the New York Rangers, who was outstanding a year ago and now all of a sudden can't find a way to get his game back together? It's a wonderful thing confidence is when you have it. But when you lose it, it is a very, very difficult thing to reacquire. And sometimes a change of locale will help. And maybe that's what we're seeing as far as Matt Murray is concerned. The other aspect, too, of course, is that he's playing for a much better hockey team than he did at Ottawa a year ago. So having said that, it's one thing you can certainly sing the praises of Dubas at this point because of the Jack Campbell situation. But were we doing that when it happened at the time? And everybody, Matt Murray, oh my gosh, he played terrible. He's always hurt and everything else. Now, all of a sudden, when it, hindsight is 20/20, which is pretty easy. And it's nice right now to be able to say, hey, what a great move that was. But at the time, everybody was kind of scratching their head. But the bottom line was you paid so much money for your top four forwards that you could not afford the amount of money that Jack Campbell thought that he was in a position to earn. And as it turned out, the Edmonton Oilers agree. Well, all of a sudden now there's that confidence that isn't there anymore. And trying to regain it is a very difficult thing. And now, of course, we've got some injury situation going on with Campbell as well.
We've been talking to the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Joe Bowen. Joe, our time is at hand. We've got to let you go. And I'll simply say, as always, thank you. Thank you so much for taking your valuable time on a Sunday morning for us. We very much appreciate it.
No problem, guys.
Thank you, Joe Bowen. Naz, Buffalo Bills. We've got about 3 minutes left. We can't finish off a show without talking the Bills. They've had a pretty good run the last couple of weeks, Naz. They got bumped out of their home stadium, had to head to Detroit for a pair, won both of those, and took down the Patriots midweek game, three in a row. They seem to be, although I don't think necessarily on the offense, they're firing on all cylinders, but... The last 3 weeks have looked pretty good for the Bills, Naz.
Yeah, they're not turning over the ball now the last couple of games, and that's the big key in the whole scheme of things. Now, Allen hasn't had the numbers that he had before, but they're not turning the ball over, and it's very important that that happens, right? They need to run the table to have home field advantage, though. So they got 5 games left. They're 9-3. Hopefully they can go 14-3.
Well, they need some help. They need some help. KC's one game. KC's only got 2 losses, so they're in the home slot right now. But they've got a tough one today in Cincinnati. But if you look at KC's schedule the rest of the season, they don't have that many difficult games. I think they get Denver a couple of times, and you know. So, Bills are. You're right, Naz. If they're going to. They need some help. Hopefully some of it comes today, and they pretty well might have to run the table. They still got to worry about winning the AFC East. They're in a dogfight with the Dolphins, but to get the Dolphins at home, I'm not sure if it's next week or the week after, they get the Jets at home, and they get Cincinnati at some point as well. So, we all hope for that home field advantage because it's so crucial. Come playoff time, especially if you're Buffalo, and it's a lot of teams don't like coming into Buffalo in January. The conditions can get pretty rough. Lou,
your thoughts on the Bills, their little run, and where we're going from here.
Well, I really think that Miami's going to be their biggest hurdle to jump over. The Dolphins right now have probably the toughest schedule left in the season. We'll see what they do today against San Francisco. That's going to be a good telling tale of where the Dolphins really are going into San Fran and battling that West Coast team out there. But again, you know, I think this is going to be a three-dog race between Kansas City, Buffalo, and Miami. And let's hope that they do have some home games in Buffalo in their playoffs instead of going on the road.
Yeah, it certainly makes all, you know, this Buffalo team, you know, and as the analysts have been saying since the beginning of the year, they're Super Bowl favorites. They've got, you know, they've got talent, and their defense is good and their offense is great, and Josh Allen's all world. But
they've had a ton of injuries, Wally. They've had a ton of injuries.
Well, the Von Miller injury doesn't help because he's, you know, he was brought in for specific, but he'll be back for the playoffs apparently. So, you know, we'll get him back, and when he's going, he can be all world as well. So, yeah, they have had a ton of injuries, like every other team in the league. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Naz, it's 10 o'clock. It's time. Last word.
Have a good week, Wally, because you need to recover. You did very well today.
Yeah, I gotta go. It's France and Poland, I think, is up right now. Gonna take a little.
I got one for you in Japan to win the World Cup. How's that?
That's a bit of a stretch, but you never know. Anyways, guys, you never know. Guys, Lou, Naz, thanks for this morning, and time to rest up for a while. All our listeners, we'll have a fantastic week. We'll be back again next Sunday morning. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.